Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are, well, we're taking a sledgehammer to one of the most persistent caricatures in modern social thought. We are wrestling with Thomas Robert Malthus.
Malthus, just the name itself, it's practically a shorthand for cold, fatalistic pessimism.
Exactly. When you hear Malthusian, you probably picture doom, right? Famine, war, disease.
Yeah.
All because there are just too many people and not enough food.
He's one of the most famous and maybe one of the most hated names in all of social science.
I think so. But the Malthus, you think you know. Mm. Like, he might be the Malthus we need to put aside to really get what he was doing. Our deep dive today is centered on a truly masterful source, Donald Winch's intellectual biography, simply titled Malthus.
And Winch's book is nothing short of an intellectual rescue mission. So our goal here is to move beyond that simplistic prophet of doom idea. We want to ground his ideas in their proper context, late 18th, early 19th century Britain, and really try to understand the complex, nuanced thinker Malthus actually was. He was a moral philosopher and, you know, a pioneering social scientist.
That's the mission, intellectual rehabilitation. So let's start with the man who conducted this rescue, Donald Winch.
Donald Winch, who lived from 1935 to 2017, was a really distinguished British intellectual historian. His specialty was the entire sweep of 18th and 19th century British political economy.
So not just population or economics in a vacuum.
Not at all. He mastered the whole interconnected world of thinkers like Adam Smith, David Ricardo. He saw how all their ideas fit together.
That sounds like he was perfectly situated to take on Malthus. What makes his perspective so, well, distinctive? It seems like he wasn't just interested in giving us a dry timeline of Malthus's life.
Far from it. Winch championed what's known as contextualist intellectual history.
Contextualist? What does that mean in practice?
It's a fundamental approach. He believed that you cannot just lift a complex idea out of the specific time and place it was written.
And then judge it by our modern standards.
Exactly. You just can't do it. If Malthus was writing in 1798, we have to understand what people were thinking about, what they were scared of in 1798.
And was it just hunger?
It was revolution. The French Revolution had just turned Europe completely upside down. And with that political revolution came a philosophical one specifically, this radical utopianism.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Thinkers like William Godwin and the Marquis de Condorcet were arguing for human perfectibility, that we could achieve a society with no scarcity, no vice.
So Winch shows that Malthus wasn't just responding to some abstract biological formula.
No, he was responding to the political urgency of shutting down what he saw as a dangerous, impossible utopian hope.
That completely reframes the discussion. So Winch's authority comes from showing Malthus not as some isolated genius with timeless laws,
yeah,
but as a political actor in a very high-stakes debate.
Absolutely. And Winch makes this very convincing case that Malthus's reputation today is, well, it's almost entirely based on a highly selective and often very poor reading of his work.
Okay, so let's get to the core of the book. Winch argues Malthus is just systematically misunderstood, reduced to this crude idea about demographic catastrophe. So what was the real starting point of his famous 1798 essay on the principle of population?
The central premise, and Winch really drives this home, is that the first essay was a polemical attack. It wasn't meant to be some broad empirical survey.
That's just a weapon.
A philosophical weapon, yes, designed to completely demolish that optimistic vision of people like Godwin. It was a direct, pragmatic intervention against this radical belief that humans could perfect their world and get rid of all suffering.
So Malthus steps onto the stage not as a prophet of doom, but as a moral philosopher. A policy critic looking for a realistic path to progress.
Even if that path was harsh, it was like a cold splash of water on the utopian fever of the time.
And Winch is just meticulous in tracing Malthus's growth, right?
Yeah.
Especially that crucial shift between the first edition in 1798 and the second one in 1803.
Yes, that is the turning point that almost all of Malthus's critics completely miss.
This is where it gets really interesting. Let's dive into that initial explosive critique, the 1798 essay. I find it fascinating that Winch highlights the personal angle here.
Yes, the essay wasn't born in some sterile academic library. Winch reveals it was sparked by these passionate arguments Malthus had with his own father, Daniel Malthus.
Really? His own dad?
His own father. Daniel was a big enthusiast of Rousseau and Enlightenment utopianism. The son, Thomas, literally wrote a book to shatter his father's philosophical dreams.
Wow, that is a very dramatic way to win a family argument. And he did it with this stark, memorable, almost brutal formula, His famous ratios remind us of those.
Well, Malthus argued that population, if it's unchecked, it increases geometrically. So 1, 2, 4, 8, 16. It doubles every 25 years or so.
It just explodes upwards.
Right. But subsistence, the food supply, that only increases arithmetically. 1, 2, 3, 4. And the gap between those two lines, well, that's not just a problem. It's the crisis that inevitably brings humanity crashing back down to Earth.
That's terrifying. And in that first edition, the only things that closed that gap were what he called positive checks.
Precisely. In 1798, the checks were only misery. So famine, disease, war, and vice, which for him was things like promiscuity, prostitution, even contraception.
So it's a devastating deterministic critique. He's saying even if you achieve a political utopia, the biology of population will immediately crash the party. Suffering has to return.
It sounds utterly fatalistic, which is, you know, why Malthus became so notorious so quickly. But this is where Winch's rescue mission really hits its stride. He shows us Malthus's evolution in that 1803 edition.
The 1803 edition, that was a profoundly different book, and Winch really emphasizes this. Malthus spent 5 years traveling through Europe collecting data.
Yes, he rewrote the polemic into a foundational work of empirical social science. He turned the philosophical argument into a research project.
So what's the single most important change in 1803? The thing that refutes that fatalistic view from the first edition?
It was the introduction of a third check on population, the preventive check of moral restraint.
Moral restraint, that feels like a seismic shift. What did he actually mean by that?
Well, it wasn't about relying on disease or war. It was defined as the voluntary postponement of marriage combined with strict celibacy until an individual could, you know, prudently afford to raise a family.
So it introduces human agency.
Exactly. Human agency, prudence, virtue. It's all in the equation now. It transformed the theory from this idea of biological doom into a constructive moral philosophy. He's arguing that population growth actually responds to social institutions and individual choice.
So the core message changes from you're doomed by biology to something more like you can achieve progress, but only through prudence and self-discipline.
It makes him a moral reformer, not just a mathematical pessimist.
And that context is absolutely crucial when we look at Malthus, the policy critic, especially his really controversial stance on the English poor laws.
The poor laws, the sort of predecessor to modern welfare, Malthus's critique is often held up as proof of his coldness, but Winch frames it inside this moral and empirical system he built.
He argued they were counterproductive. How so?
Malthus believed that while the poor laws were motivated by benevolence, they produced these devastating unintended consequences.
Okay.
By guaranteeing subsistence no matter what choices people made, specifically marrying early and having kids without the means to support them, the laws basically removed the natural incentive for prudence.
Ah, so the safety net removes the need for foresight.
Exactly. And Malthus argued this encouraged dependency, it increased population faster than the economy could handle, and ultimately it lowered real wages for all laborers, even those working hard and not taking relief.
So he saw the law as generating the very poverty they were trying to fix.
He did. It's a classic, if very challenging, argument about behavioral incentives in social policy.
And importantly, his proposal wasn't just abolish them overnight. Winch stresses he advocated for the gradual abolition of the poor laws.
And this is key. Coupled with a national education system that would specifically promote foresight, responsibility, and independence.
The education part is so important. He was focused on empowering people with the tools for long-term self-reliance, not just giving them relief that masked the root of the problem.
Which for him was imprudence.
Beyond population, we often forget that Malthus was a major figure in classical political economy. Let's talk about Malthus the economist.
We have to, and you have to talk about his incredible intellectual friendship and rivalry with David Ricardo.
They disagreed on everything.
Almost everything. Rent theory, economic methodology. Ricardo was very abstract, deductive. He built these clean, logical models.
But Malthus.
Malthus was empirical, contextual. He always grounded his theory in real-world data and social conditions.
And their most famous clash was about whether a widespread economic downturn was even possible.
Correct. The prevailing wisdom then was Say's Law, which essentially said that supply creates its own demand.
Right. Production creates the income to buy the products. So a big crisis from lack of demand.
Well,
impossible.
They thought it was structurally impossible, but Malthus disagreed. Vehemently.
What was his argument?
He argued for the possibility of general gluts, what we'd now call economic depressions caused by a failure of effective demand or underconsumption.
So if the wealthy save too much and the poor can't afford enough,
demand dries up, you get idle factories, mass unemployment. He saw it as a real danger.
That is a massive insight. And Winch notes that he lost this argument in his own time. Say's law dominated the 19th century. But Malthus's view, it was later recognized as a precursor to the theories of who?
John Maynard Keynes. In the 20th century, Keynes famously called Malthus a neglected genius for seeing this possibility of persistent underconsumption decades before the Great Depression made it obvious to everyone.
Fascinating. Let's pull back and look at the key themes and messages Winch delivers in this whole intellectual portrait. The first one that just jumps out is the need to see the complexity versus the caricature. Winch shows the real Malthus was defined by moral restraint. That introduces choice, morality, social norms into the whole demographic picture.
That's the real takeaway. Population growth for him is not automatic. It's not fatalistic. It's responsive to our choices. And that ties right into the second theme, the integration of economics and morality.
Right. He saw political economy not as some value-neutral science, but as inherently connected to moral philosophy. Solving poverty wasn't just about maximizing GDP, it was about fostering character, virtue, responsibility.
That is a huge difference from how a lot of economics is viewed today. And the third essential theme is the context dependence of social theory.
His ideas make no sense unless you remember what he was dealing with. Massive population growth, entrenched poverty, and this real fear of revolution.
You always have to ask, what specific problem was a thinker trying to solve?
And finally, Winch highlights the misappropriation of ideas. How complex concepts get simplified into Malthusianism, a slogan that serves political agendas Malthus himself might have hated.
It's so ironic. He condemned contraception as a vice, but modern neo-Malthusians promoted it heavily, all under his banner. It really shows the danger of using these intellectual labels without doing the homework.
Malthus certainly had memorable lines, though, often very stark. Winch teaches us how to read them without ripping them out of context.
He does.
Let's start with the one that defined him. The Stark Formulae, he wrote, "The power of population is indefinitely greater than the power in the earth to produce subsistence for man."
That phrase by itself sounds like a declaration of war on human hope. But Winch shows this was Malthus's starting premise. It was the challenge to the utopians. It was the problem he set out to solve, not his final answer.
Now compare that to the nuanced quote on his solution, the one that reveals the moral philosopher. Moral restraint may be defined to be abstinence from marriage, from prudential considerations, with a conduct strictly moral during the period of such restraint.
And that quote shows his profound belief in human agency. It's the path to progress through self-control. It is the hopeful counterpoint to those terrifying ratios.
Then there's the really sharp policy quote, the one used to brand him as cruel. A man who is born into a world already possessed has no claim of right to the smallest portion of food.
Oof. It's harsh, but it has to be understood strictly within his detailed critique of the poor laws. It wasn't about cruelty. It was an analytical statement about policy structure that guaranteed unconditional subsistence undermines the long-term responsibility a society needs to thrive.
Winch's book is just. It's a masterclass in critical thinking. The primary real-life application, I think, is learning to be deeply skeptical of these simplified intellectual labels.
Absolutely. If someone uses the term Malthusian today, you now have the tools to ask. Which Malthus are you talking about? The 1798 polemicist or the 1803 moral philosopher?
And beyond that, his central insight about limits is just hugely relevant today.
It is. Malthus was the first great limits to growth theorist. His core concept, that infinite growth is impossible on a finite planet, that's foundational to modern environmentalism, to sustainability debates.
And his analysis of the poor laws. It forces us to ask critical policy questions today. Do our social safety nets create unintended behavioral effects? We have to analyze the long-term consequences of policy, just like he did.
And on a personal level, this idea of moral restraint, it translates pretty directly into responsible adulthood, financial planning.
It does.
Delaying major commitments, having kids, taking on huge debt until you have the means. It's really just a very old form of financial literacy, emphasizing that individual prudence has a societal impact.
What surprised me most in this deep dive, thanks to Winch, was how deeply personal Malthus's work was. That the original essay wasn't some dry paper. It was an explosive, targeted, almost personal polemic against his own father.
A family debate that shook social science.
It really did.
For me, the most enduring lesson is just the power of this kind of intellectual rescue. Winch forces us to see that the real Malthus wasn't an enemy of human improvement. He was a sober-minded realist. He believed progress is possible, but only if we face that permanent tension between our desires and our planet's limits with prudence, with education, and with moral self-control.
He offered a demanding path, not just inevitable doom.
Exactly. A demanding path toward virtue.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.